Are there any questions or anything to share? It's good to see all of us looking almost like different people already today, having rested a bit. So we could call this conversation now the bathroom and the burning bush, partly just because Ulrika G is here, who helps get the recordings to the website, and they like to have titles and I don't, so we have a title today: The Bathroom and the Burning Bush. So first I'd like to just give an experiment possibility. Just feeling the tone in the body with different kinds of statements in the mind, different kinds of descriptions or realizations in the mind about anything really simple. So for example, oh, I'm so tired. Could be the same words. But sometimes it's just, oh, I'm so tired. Like, oh, like I realize by being in touch with this, I'm so tired. I realize I'm just tired. I realize how tired I am, or at least the beginning of how tired I am. And even though it's tiredness, which may not feel so good, but the realization that, oh, I'm just tired. And tired makes the mind kind of like a squeaky wheel. Not very pleasant also, usually. Oh, I'm just tired. It can just, the realization. Or the other ways we can say that thought, with maybe even a panic, oh, I'm so tired. We're afraid of it. But the other ways we could say how tired we are to ourselves, oh, I'm so tired. The tone of it and the ripple through is so tiring. So just feeling where, even though maybe in both cases there's somehow a wish to be less tired, but the one statement is a kind of relaxing into resting. Oh, I'm so tired. Okay. There's already more energy. And we're fine with being tired and letting that actually lead the natural way, which is towards rest. Tiredness helps us find rest if we agree that we're tired. Or when I think I shouldn't be tired, tiredness is wrong, and I think I'm tired. And I'm more in touch with how wrong it is that I'm tired and less in touch with the fact of just being tired. So I'm more in touch with my attitude. than with what is happening. And then what the mind says, what the system does, is usually a hypocrisy. Is that the same word in French by any chance? Hypocrisie? Yeah. Is it? I'm not sure the breakdown of the word, but when I say something, but it, in this case, I'm so tired, like, this is wrong, I shouldn't be tired, but what I'm saying is making me more tired. So it's actually doing the opposite of what it maybe intends or pretends to be about. Okay. Sorry?
Why is hypocrisy?
Yeah. Maybe with a different example is better. So, like, we're in silence, but the rest of the world is not in silence. And the ashram really thought they were not going to have any construction during the retreat this year. And then, there was just this one little thing that they needed to finish, and the workers couldn't come before, and they've come, so they've come such a long way, and sorry, it's noisy, and it'll just be today, you know, and then, well, they didn't quite finish, so then it was 2 days, and I need to ask how long, just to know how long they think the construction will go on. So we're in silence, and the rest of the world is not in silence. And sometimes being in silence, we start to feel a tenderness that is in a good direction, but not comfortable. We can feel sensitive. And so then that noise, I won't give a specific so that if you didn't notice it, you won't start to notice, but some noise of some kind gets your attention and kind of is uncomfortable to that sensitivity. And so easily, instead of being like, oh, I love silence, that's hard, I love silence. Like, ah, I hate the noise. When are they gonna stop making so much noise? And then we're shouting, at least inside. And maybe we're stomping out of the room or slamming the door. Or so the hypocrisy is, I want silence, I love silence. And in that wish, I've lost touch with silence, and I'm making lots of noise. So it doesn't mean never to say, please, can you pause the construction from 10 till whatever, 12, and then 3 till 6. Like, we try to find our ways. It's not to just always be passive. But when we're active from being in touch with what was calling us really sincerely, like silence or rest. I feel tired. I love that's towards rest, really just resting. Loving the rest, resting. Instead of, oh, I don't want to be tired. That makes me tired. So the hypocrisy would be getting caught up in or saying something that is doing the opposite of what I'm saying, in the way I'm using the word today. So that's an experimentation I wanted to suggest. Is it clear, more or less? And I think one thing that can happen when we let ourselves be called into rest or silence or whatever we love . What happens is that we don't get completely caught up in what's in the way, like the noise or the tiredness. We don't get completely focused on the tiredness or the noise when we're feeling the call towards rest or silence and letting ourselves go with it, letting the tissue there's not only the focus on that direction, but there's okay and so much else. So with sounds, it could be not only sounds that bother me. There's also sounds that kind of rhyme with quiet. For example. What's also interesting is that when we have that, it's kind of a sort of an insight, that shift of alignment into agreeing, saying yes to the direction of rest or silence. What it means is that we've actually disengaged from trying too hard and protection that doesn't protect, defense that doesn't defend, a kind of hardness and a usual way of meeting the world. We've disengaged with that, not by trying to, but just by saying yes to something else. Does that make sense? That so, and in that, there can be some time that we feel a lot of vulnerability or sensitivity. It's just a transitional thing. It's not actually that we stay especially vulnerable. We just find out that we are aware of how vulnerable things are. We hadn't been aware of that. Now we are aware of that, and it's heightened feeling. And so we're also more loose, and something can pop out, like suddenly we're so angry about something, or suddenly we remember a dream, and we don't know what to make of it, any of it. We get surprised by ourselves. So it can be helpful to hear what I experience with other people and myself, that there's these times that we feel this sensitivity as a kind of soreness. So more not just sensitive that I can feel very subtle things, but sensitive a bit seeming reactive. Surprising myself. I keep getting surprised by what happens in my mind and in my body. But it does seem to be that after some time of just staying, okay, but there is vulnerability. Let's not pretend there isn't vulnerability. Let's just stay. And let these things pop and pop out. We may also start to notice that things that we thought were really a big knot that would always be with us, like that we would always really care about such and such a thing, and that just stops happening. We just don't care anymore. The crow sound doesn't bother you anymore. It used to just, and you realize it doesn't bother you. And after a while, could be some years maybe, of practicing being in what feels like vulnerability. So we could say that we're practicing staying vulnerable. We could say it that way, because that's what it feels like, because we're afraid of it. So it feels vulnerable just to be with life. But then we start to notice, as a friend said recently, that there, in the tenderness, the harshness is gone. My own harshness is gone. My own harshness. That's true, that word is not so easy. Harshness. This is a friend who has better English than I do. Harshness. So hard and sharp and mean. Isn't there. And there's some kind of power that today I call the burning bush, or the words burning bush as a description for that. Something that's like flame, but doesn't actually burn up the bush. Doesn't actually use anything up. And is seems to be just in the middle of the desert somewhere. Why should there be suddenly a bush on fire? And not the next bush on fire, but only this one. Just some kind of power that takes place, that we can clearly feel is related to being in the tenderness, not being defended, not trying too hard, not running away. Oh, I'm just tired. Resting, for example. But also a power that kind of rises up and just, it does happen to be right here, with some connection to that disarming, to that, yes, I am tired, letting that rest me. So along the way, I hope you can hear how it's not all about just staying still, which I mentioned before as well. We might find that there's a love in our deep being of stillness that's like deeply drinking something that, some spring water. And then drinking and even just going under and being that delicious spring water. But along the way, so many movements need to happen. So if part of our main practice is feeling for that shift and alignment, oh, I'm just tired, and letting that rest you. Or, oh, I have so much energy. What does that do? Not constantly trying to put on the brake and or the accelerator, thinking it should be different, but in contact with what's the experience and what if it's not a problem to be tired or to have lots of energy, or both at the same time, could be. So a shift in alignment that then seems to be this natural falling into place, a natural less using of energy. Naturally less friction. And so even if we come in the hall with some kind of intention that it's about being still for that 45 minutes, there's so many ways of being still, just like there's so many ways of that statement, oh, I'm so tired. And feeling around for where there's yes to stillness. That's not about literal stillness, necessarily. So you could feel maybe when you kind of arrive in some spring water of stillness. Ah, good. Just staying through that agitation, staying still. And then what happens is sometimes a big movement, a big breath. You can feel how that big breath that happens with this little insight or little shift into alignment, naturally, it's like the body sort of integrating this stillness. We don't find that to be a problem. It doesn't interrupt the stillness that there's a big, huge breath, which is a movement. And so then when there's a flash of anger or fear or insecurity or superiority or whatever, flash. Where could we be that has room for that as also not an interruption? A flash of anger not interrupting stillness or calm. And then during the day, especially those who've already been here for the first retreat, you hopefully are a bit more rested, unless, I don't know what happened yesterday, if you went to town. Heaven help you. If you helped us with the registration. May all blessings land with you on your mattress. During the day, not in the hall, what? So I just want to say, because it happens so many times, that people on the third or the fourth day, you can tell they're just like bursting with the need to dance or walk fast or something. And they're like hoping to make it through day seven without doing that because they think they shouldn't just dance. So now, just to tell you on day one, let's just clear that out of the way. You can dance. And how good if the dance is also part of the same shift of alignment, of a kind of a yes to what's called for. Instead of like bursting with the need to do something with this energy and then feeling like you got out of your flow to get rid of that so that you could come back to immobilizing yourself. So there's something that happens in animals, including us animals, when we get a shock. It can happen that we get immobilized. Is that a word in French? Immobilisé? Yeah. Yeah? Maybe for just a second we stop breathing. Could be a small thing. Or we needed to run away, but we couldn't. Or whatever. We needed to say something and we couldn't. And all the messages that came along the way telling you not to be yourself and not to be alive. Even if we have questions about our system of education and our system of work, the general system of how people go to work and all that, we have questions about it, but we just are still getting on with that same thing. I think, like today, I had this image of the planet Earth, and we know that the continents are still moving. But I think, maybe it's just me, but I think there's some idea that they were moving back then, and now they've come into place. Now they're in the place that they've been coming to all along. Now they're in place. Like, the shape of the continents is now adult. And it just flashed for me a sense of a child in a womb. So there, I don't know so much about embryology, but there, for example, the kidneys before their kidneys. However you talk about that, the things that are going to be kidneys that start to have a shape as two things on two sides. They go up, I think, into the head, and then they come back down. I think there's like three locations that they sort of pause before they end up here. I think they go up and down and then here, something like that. It just felt like, what if we consider the shape of our planet as if it's still in the womb, still a baby in a womb, hasn't been born yet. Just a little more both humble and also with the mysterious kind of really weird beauty of life doing all these really weird movements. So all of us in the womb, we all were. And we had three different kinds of kidneys. And it's moving towards being born. So why not let it be weird and make movements? And why think we know how it's supposed to, what the map is? So I want you to feel the goodness of stillness and what that can give. The deep rest as a real radical thing, a real cooling down of reactivity and programming. But not as a companion to the ways you were told not to be you. To be good, to sit at the desk, to organize your day around the 8 hours at work, which would be usually inside somewhere. And here, feeling how deeply resting into the stillness, which is a powerful, it's like resting into powerful something, stability that's powerful and bottomless. It's not a place that is, that we land and stay. If the rest and the freedom with how you are here and how you're listening to yourself and to me and Odelia and everybody else. Is asking you to allow some weird movements also. And sometimes by being still and some old things fall away and some old things come up, both weird. We don't know ourselves without being bothered by the crows, or we don't know ourselves without like needing to be first for the chai. Not that that's right or wrong, but we don't know ourselves without that. It just fell away one day. We don't know ourselves with suddenly, we never felt jealousy before, for example. Or that thing, which is the bathroom part of the talk, that we felt so many times. Oh no, we thought we dealt with it. Here it is again. We'll get back to the bathroom later. So naturally, it's so natural that some energy gets a little bit freed and can come a little bit to the surface that is we don't recognize it, or we don't want it because it's a bit potent. It could be more in the body, it could be more in the emotions, it could be more in the thinking or energy. And sometimes it just simply needs to do a few little movements. And that's it. So there's a lot of great information coming now from decades of people working with trauma, which is just that something overwhelming happened and we couldn't complete a good response, the way I understand it. And many times we just got frozen. Or we got frozen with the incompletion that stayed with us. And sometimes without any clue what it's about, just a weird movement, just a simple movement. Just a weird, even imagery that comes to the mind that could be violent, or it could seem egotistical, some imagery in the mind about winning, being triumphant. It could just be, you know, the continents are moving towards being born. It could just be some unnecessary weight falling down and some essential, not mine, not owned power able to be present, being a burning bush. And with a lot of living things, like us when we were a few cells, the body when it was a few cells, it's like a long time that nothing seems to be happening. And then, boop, something happens. Something really big happens, like two cells become eight or whatever it is. And then nothing seems to be happening, except it's kind of very alive, if we tune in. Nothing happening, and then there's not our spine, but a midline, for example, eventually. And then that's gone. And then there is a spine. And it still looks like a fish or a whatever. So we can get kind of recover a rhythm that we agree with. Nothing seems to be happening. Yeah, nothing's happening. We feel the aliveness and enjoy that resting, and then something happens. And what exactly led to that happening? Maybe we could sometimes analyze fruitfully. But I think more interesting to like feel what feels more fruitful, whether I see the fruit happening or not. And give all those good conditions, give them. Enough silence, enough time looking at the nature, the non-human and non-machine world. Enough chance to follow your own inspiration where you just see somebody's hand, maybe your own, and you see what a weird thing it is. What a specific and weird thing it is. And that's all. You don't have to go further with a whole document about it. Just let it come across as weird. Maybe. And so just to come back to the, did you want to ask me? Okay. To come back to that, those few things or that one thing or those many things that you thought you were done with it. You did so much therapy and so much Qigong and so much meditation and so much journaling and whatever. And, oh no, not again. Here it is. Your fear of speaking in a group. You have a question and you're never going to ask it. That's for sure. So for that, it's not about forcing you to. So by the way, you could write a question on a piece of paper and put it on the board for us. That's equally valid. So I wanted to use the metaphor of the bathroom, the ashram bathroom particularly, for those things that keep coming up and that we think we keep failing at dealing with. we take as a failure so often. When I first started teaching retreats in India, and it was a long time ago, like 99, 2000, 2001 were the first few years. And ashrams are different now. So the bathrooms tend to be cleaner than they were. But part of what we would do is arrive a few days early so that we could clean the bathrooms. They were so gross. And so just really scrubbing so that you did have to take a bath afterwards. So that you could enter the bathroom and be in there. And not just like kind of be in there and get out, you know. And this ashram, I don't think we ever had such a problem with the bathrooms, like that, like the full chetty bathrooms. I think we were the yearly cleaning crew in so many ashrams. I'm not, like, literally. Which also, I mean, just by the way, when in the Indian culture, the bathroom is that thing that's so dirty, you have to just do it the right way. The right person has to clean it and then clean themselves. Otherwise, like, all is lost. And so it's not really clean. So in yourself, feeling those places that, like, because you have to do it so right, you don't quite go there. And it's just gross. And you could just, like, get the stuff and do it. So each year in the ashram, it's a little more done. Like, there's a little less chance for a snake to come in through that hole. It's blocked off, for example. Or now the bathroom where I am now is tiled. But as happens not only in India, it's tiled. And so there's that water that's standing there. And at first I thought, well, just let it be there. Like, it's clean water, doesn't smell. But Jan, who shares the bathroom, is like, ugh, that water. Okay, so there's that broom that's especially for that. So, like, get the water to go through the hole so that it gets to the drain. You know, and I'm like, I did it. I cleaned the bathroom. I got that water, and Jan will be happy. More comfortable. There's the water again, like a few hours later. It's still clean water, so, like, not sure where it's coming from. Don't really want to go there to figure out where it's coming from. Probably the toilet. Which part of the toilet? Doesn't smell. Gross. Yeah, it's like, ugh. And then, okay, there's a drought, and this is water. I'll just let the ashram know. They probably want to know. They have a leak of some kind. And they came, like, pretty soon, and, like, several of them came. And they were really, like, trying things. And it was never clear to me, it's still not clear to me, if they think they fixed it. Or if they think they came and thought about it, and then, you know, they had to get stuff to fix it. But so there's the water again. But each time I kind of did something about it, there was that just so small. I mean, I'm using this example because it's just so small, so ridiculous. To feel triumphant, to feel victorious, to feel just so small feeling of just feeling good that I dealt with it. And then, oh no, I didn't deal with it. Well, I did, but the water is still here. And then slowly starting to get a sense in there, a little bit dark in there, like, it's so ridiculous and on purpose. Like, where is the drip? Is there a drip? Or is it like a leak? Like, what kind of leak is it? And then starting to, ugh, I felt the drip. Where did it come from? Which drip is that? Again, like, so gross. But then go there. There's the drip. Oh, there's the drip. Oh, that's why they turned that off and the toilet didn't flush before. Now I understand. And two problems end up being one. And still, like, well, I'm not, we're going to be able to, we're going to flush the toilet and we're going to have a leak. Okay. I can live with that. Like, that's when we're like, I can live with that. That, those, like, panics or rages or insecurity, that I can live with that. It's okay. Oh, it's all one problem, kind of. It's all one difficulty, one leak. I can live with that. And then this morning, suddenly, it's like, oh, I can put a bucket under the leak, under the drip, and catch the water. I'm not fixing the leak. I don't know how to fix the leak. But now that I know, I can let them know, maybe they can fix the leak. But now I'm saving the water, which is actually not as much as I thought. Today it's like only this much. The floor is not gross for Gyan in the bathroom. And I feel like so small, but such a small taste of the brilliancy of the mind. The mind is so brilliant when we let it be. It's like, just let ourselves, okay, it's gross, but just look. And the getting, just letting the thing that calls your attention again and again, noticing how that makes you more expert. You have more experience of the world. You know more about leaks. And you're more comfortable with toilets. And you got to have that chance of, oh, let's try this. Which just feels good, even if it doesn't work. Asking for help or doing it yourself, both, when appropriate, feels good. And so it's that, this way that just dealing with it somehow, meeting it and seeing what happens when you just wait and try to see where is the leak coming from. Is there a drip, or is it that in itself is already good practice. That's good in itself. Just noticing a little more is good in itself. And it also is good in the future. Like, it gives some confidence and experience for fixing things, which is not our main sort of thing here, but why not? And so all of our practice, like in the stillness and in the weird movements, or in letting also, it doesn't have to be only weird movements, it can be beautiful movements, a beautiful walk, a lovely time dancing. It's good in itself. And it is also some kind of preparation. It acts as some kind of preparation. So that in a moment where we get some kind of, there's some opening where we can catch a kind of natural moment. I'll say more about it in a moment, but we just have a chance to catch just a natural moment. Sometimes it happens when we give up, sometimes it happens when the bell rings or the schedule ends. Or it just happens. And it's really good if there has happened to have been, there happens to be that preparation before, that we can both have the subtlety to recognize the naturalness. That, just stay there. And then the preparation that allows you to stay there and slide into where that naturalness goes, which is deep. We're not trying to be ourselves, we're not trying to be transparent, but it just is transparent and real. And the preparation that was good practice anyway can help us just stay with that, stay tuned to that. As long as possible. Like staying with that natural, where does it go? How deep does it go? There's a famous story of Gautam Buddha that you may have heard that I think we've misunderstood partly. So there's the story of him at his worst moment of his life, probably, where he did try everything and it didn't work. It does come across to me as a kind of suicidal moment. It's not in the text that way, but it comes across to me as that kind of. He tried everything, it hurt, and it didn't help. What anybody could suggest, he really did it, and he did it better than his teachers sometimes. And it didn't help. So, like, the bathroom leak, but big time bathroom leak. And it is the toilet. In case you're saying the same as my son, I'm bored. I can tell you what I told him. 2 minutes. Just staying there in what would be a great vulnerability. Because nothing works. And you notice that nothing works. That's when we feel vulnerable. We were the same vulnerable before, but we realize we're vulnerable when we realize it didn't work. And if we could trust something there that isn't really the vulnerability so much, but stay vulnerable and trust something anyway. So sometimes in the worst moments, this is actually easier. When your worst nightmare happens and everybody is against you. They hate you or they disagree with you or they really think you're like, okay, so the worst thing happened, whatever your worst thing, but let's say that. But still, some tiny little, I call it a trickle of trust from one of my favorite texts, Yoga Vasishtha, trickle of trust. So even if they disagree, but still, this is really my best guess is like this. So Gautam Buddha there, with the toilet water up to here, at least, or more, treading water in it. It didn't work. And stay. Don't leave us. Stay. Then the thought can occur. Maybe there's another way. That did make it into the text. Before he's sure, there's maybe. Maybe there's another way to deal with this toilet leak. Maybe it's not a toilet leak, whatever. Maybe there's another way. And then he remembered, this is what you might have heard, he remembered being a child under a tree, feeling good for no particular reason, feeling really good. Not excited good, not like I'm great good, just feeling this natural moment that feels good, so good. And then the mind could say, could recognize, maybe that's the way, feeling afraid of that way. This also made it into the text. So helpful. and then that's the way, and he, okay. So what we usually get from that is that joyful concentration of that child moment is the way into depth. But the thing is, so they call it the first jhana, the technical name for it, that happened to the child. The thing is, one of the things that Gotam had tried in those 6 years of heavy practice that didn't work was the first jhana as a technique. And the second and the third and the fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth. He tried it. He was the best at it. His teacher wanted him to take over the monastery. It didn't work. So the memory of it as a natural moment, I think, is what's important. Does that make sense? Not as a technique. So we can try the techniques, try it on, get used to it. The muscles learn, the mind learns, etc. We get used to making mistakes and not being good at things and then getting better at it, both sides. Humble and confident. Good in itself and a preparation for when a natural moment kind of opens. In whatever way, your heart, something happens and you can stay with it, go with it, let it suck you in to your depth. Please. That's the end. That was more than 2 minutes. I'm sorry, that was four. But that is the end. Thank you for listening. May our practice and lives be dedicated to the stream of awakening for all.